Today I just want to brief you on our recent research on using energy crops for reducing area-wide lead soil contamination, and to give credit to my co-authors Dongmei Wong and Michael Blaylock, who's at Eden Space with me. What do I mean by area-wide lead soil contamination? Well, it's mainly defined as low to moderate levels of lead over large geographical areas, often exceeding regional background levels. And the sources often include emissions from nearby smelters, leaded gasoline, and the use of lead arsenate pesticides in agricultural fields. Washington State alone has over 700,000 acres of such soils, and there are at least 5 lead smelter sites and 6 abandoned lead mining sites on the MPL, also having extensive areas. Unfortunately, when you're talking about large areas, it's very difficult to find a process that can remediate these soils in a cost-effective manner. Both dig and haul and chemical stabilization actually are very cost prohibitive when you start talking about large areas, with costs ranging from $100 to $500 per ton for dig and haul. And even though it's cheaper for stabilization, you know, when with large areas, the cost adds up. And so what we at Eden Space, we feel a promising alternative is phyto remediation, which has been successfully used to remove lead from residential soils and in industrial soils. It's also very applicable to large areas. It's very much a farming technique. One of the other benefits is that you can selectively remove the target metal of interest and still preserve the topsoil. And one other benefit is it does have slightly lower remedial costs than stabilization, and that in-situ applications are at the lower end of the scale. However, those remedial costs for phyto remediation often include the disposal of the plants after you're done with the remediation in a hazardous waste landfill. And we feel that you could actually perhaps reduce those costs if the plants could serve one more additional purpose rather than just being sent to a hazardous waste landfill. And it would also eliminate any long-term liability. And so in order to do that, we feel that you would need a high biomass yielding plant, preferably not a food or a feed crop, that could be triggered to remove lead but still serve one more purpose other than being a waste. And so what we explored in this research is looking at switchgrass and elephant grass, which has been touted as potential cellulosic ethanol feedstocks because of their high biomass, greater than 10 tons per acre, and see whether or not they can also accumulate lead, and if they do, that it doesn't affect their suitability to serve as that feedstock. And so the objectives of the study, the first one, you know, certainly is the main one. Can we use these two energy crops for lead phyto extraction? It's never been done before that we know of. And so we had to determine the growth response on these contaminated soils, and also to see if they would respond to our soil additives that we use for inducing lead uptake, which is now what some of our new research we've identified. What we call transient phyto extraction agents that trigger lead uptake but biodegrade very rapidly. And then the second question would explore whether or not that TPA treatment, you know, how long does it affect the post-harvest lead solubility? You don't want to have a long-term off-site migration risk of chelated lead. And then the final two have to deal with, once you have the actual biomass harvested, is there a market for that lead? Could you actually have such high lead concentrations in the biomass to be of interest to a recycling plant? Or again, could it still serve as a feedstock for ethanol? So these were the methods that we used. We looked at two smelter soils, one from the Tacoma smelter in Washington State, the other from the Herculaneum smelter in Missouri, and we compared the results to a spike soil that we had spiked with lead nitrate. we tested a combination of organic acids and synthetic chelants that we feel, well, at least in the literature, that there were reports that they were biodegradable, certainly much more than EDTA. But we did compare it to EDTA as our positive control and also the water as a negative. We then conducted our growth chamber research, and we compared both energy crops, the switchgrass and the elephant grass, to a tall fescue, because we'd had success in using turf grass in remediation of residential lead. And we did 4 reps per plant, and we took the top 2 to 4 TPAs that we came out of our screening, and again, compared the uptake to EDTA and water. We then did, after the plants were harvested, we then looked at the potted soils and looked at the long-term lead solubility, again, whether or not the TPAs were exacerbating a off-site migration. And then again, the final 2 tasks were, again, to look at whether or not we could increase the lead concentration sufficiently high that it would be of interest to a lead recycler. We did that with incineration. And then finally, whether or not the lead in the biomass would impede the sortability, impede whether or not these crops could be used as a cellulosic ethanol feedstock. And that was assessed via enzymatic hydrolysis. So finally, we get to the results. This is a summary of our phytometric analysis that we typically run. And what this shows is the lead concentrations range from 500 up to nearly 1300 in the smelter soils. Each of the soils had a fair amount of native or water extractable lead. pH range from 5.4 to 7.1, and conductivity was fairly low. And so from these results, as well as other tests that we did, we really did not find any phytotoxic conditions. And so we went ahead with the next step was to actually screen those organic acids and synthetic chelants, again, for their potential for extracting lead from these soils, because again, the lead has to be soluble before a plant can take up lead. And what these results show, certainly it shows that EDTA is certainly one of the best chelants, but again, it biodegrades too slowly. So the other chelants that actually worked were the synthetic ones, and that was Bapure, EDDS, GLDA, and NTA. And so those were passed forward to be used in our growth chamber work. So again, then we went to the growth chamber, and we grew the switchgrass and miscanthus, as well as the tall fescue. And in these soils, we applied the TPAs at the best time, as well as then harvesting these plants. And then following harvest, we would measure the biomass yield as well as the lead concentration in that biomass. And doing a product of those two parameters gets you how much lead is actually removed by the plant. And that's what this graph is showing here, is that even though what we routinely found, we found tall fescue actually giving higher concentrations, it just doesn't have the biomass that miscanthus and switchgrass have. And so those two energy crops were able to out-compete or overcome their limitation in terms of lead uptake because of their high biomass. But still, we were able to get over 2,000 parts per million of lead in switchgrass. And so that concentration with high biomass yield is very favorable for taking lead out of the soil. After the harvest, we then looked at the long-term lead solubility, and that was assessed by a sequential extraction procedure. And this shows the results for each of the chelants that were applied for each of the 3 plant species. And I just kind of summarized, rather than give all the 5 steps, but just compared what we would consider the bioavailable versus the non-bioavailable lead. And what you find is that it really, especially if you look at the water being the control, you really don't see a big difference. You don't see that by adding the TPA that you really enhance the lead solubility, which is giving credence to the fact that these TPAs are biodegrading and that the lead is resorbing back to the soil. So finally, now we have the biomass harvested. Is there a market for this? Could it serve as a commodity for some sector? And so what we looked at again was seeing whether or not, if by ashing, if we actually incinerate the biomass, would we actually get concentrations high enough to be of interest to a lead recycler? And while as expected, we did find that the lead concentration did increase. It's just nowhere near where any lead recycler would actually take it from us. You would really need to get almost to 50% lead, which I wouldn't want to see a plant that actually has that. So our last recourse was whether or not, well, could we use these energy crops still in terms of a feedstock for cellulosic ethanol? And so we ran the biomass through the enzymatic hydrolysis and measured the amount of glucose released and compared it to the lead concentration in that biomass. And sometimes probably an R squared of zero is very good, because it showed no trend. There's really no effect of lead on the production of glucose for any of those three grass species. And so, I guess in conclusion, I just want to say that our data supported the fact that we feel that we could use switchgrass and elephant grass to be an effective dual use crop for addressing these area-wide soil lead contamination areas, and still serve, instead of having the biomass being shipped off to a hazardous waste landfill, that you could actually find a market and potentially in the biofuel market for somebody to actually pay you to take it off your hands. And while the lead in the biomass does not affect glucose production, what we want to do in our next phase is actually look at the fate and segregation of the lead throughout the entire fermentation process of actually producing ethanol from these feedstocks. But overall, the overall conclusion is we do feel that area-wide soil lead contamination could be addressed using these energy crops, but it might take a very long time. At least with each harvest, it's that process is facilitated by producing of an income generating crop. And I just want to acknowledge my funding, an EPA SBIR Phase 1 grant. Any questions? No, that's true, and that's always been a fear, especially with EDTA, which we had normally done in the past. But because EDTA degrades much more slowly, there was always that concern that if the plant didn't take it up, it would leach. Now, there are ways of trying to minimize that by just putting down, enough chelant that you really need, and also how much water that you apply with that chelant to make sure you're not really dousing it and getting it into the subsoil, trying to restrict it in that rooting depth. But the benefit of these TPAs is that they do biodegrade very much. Within 14 days is basically that data that I showed.